What up? What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. Last week, John and I could not do our Wednesday night, Thursday morning show because of me. I will take the blame there. But we did record over the weekend. So if you were looking for this show, we did kind of a different type of weekend recap show on Saturday night. So that is up there in the feed if you want to check it out. So we're back just a few days later, 4 days later. We're going to talk about Dynamite. And because I didn't have a We're Live pal this week, Andrew and I usually do the WWE and AEW news. Going to do a little bit of We're Live pal news with John here. John, what's going on?
We're also live, pal. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
We're live. If we had a video component, yeah, we would be live on YouTube, but we don't because
we're on delay, pal.
You know, at some point, where you're living right now, your house, they're going to surprise us. And all of a sudden, you're going to have like explosive Wi-Fi and we'll be able to do more video.
I know. I got to, you know, when the kids are in college, I think. I'm good. I'm actually really good. I'm a little tired last night. Stayed up late because they dropped. You know, I got to watch Andor right when it drops. I just can't. I should be sleeping, right? But I was like, screw it. So I, you know, watched Andor, and it had to be like one of the longest episodes I've ever done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like almost 50 minutes, but it was good. It's good. I like that show a lot.
I'm still on the first episode. I sat down for about 15 minutes and I was like, I'll get through, you know, half of this thing. And I had other stuff going on. But once you know what I actually have to get through? And I think Dave and I are going to interview the Dark Side of the Ring guys. I don't know if it's just going to be Evan this time, like last time, but I have screeners for some of this territory stuff.
Oh,
so
cool.
I'll try and get through that probably in these next 2 days, just in case Dave and I do interview Evan on Friday, so that I'll have an idea of what the show is about. But yeah, we can't really say too much about it until I think the week before it debuts. So, so I got to get through that. Then I got to do this Cobra Kai stuff with our buddy Chris De Petrillo for our Patreon. I've already seen the first 5 episodes of Cobra Kai season 5. I'm probably going to throw them on in the background just to kind of be fresh because I watched them like 3 weeks ago. And then we're going to start doing our recaps. And then once I get through that stuff, then I can watch Andor. All right, so a couple of interesting pop culture notes, and interesting, this is more sad than it is interesting, but I'm actually surprised at how much, how many people are posting about it, which is RIP Coolio.
I know, I couldn't believe it.
The guy was only 59 years old. I thought, like, when I saw that he had passed away, I knew he was a little bit older than people realized he was when he kind of hit it big. Because it took him like, probably took him like 6 or 7 years to really get noticed. And so by the time he comes out, he's not like in his like teens or early 20s. He's like closer to his 30s by the time he pops. And so, yeah, very memorable artist from the mid to late 90s there, Coolio. And I never knew Coolio's real name. But because he passed away, it's in all the stories. Artist Leon Ivy Jr., a.k.a. Wow. Coolio. Wow. So yeah, RIP Coolio. I think the people who don't know him for his rap career would have known him for
some movies, right?
Well, Weird Al Yankovic. Remember Weird Al Yankovic did Amish Paradise?
He did a parody of him. Okay,
parodied Coolio, and Coolio got mad.
No shit, did he?
Yeah, he really got mad. He, you know, he was kind of in his
that Weird Al.
He was in his star thing, right? He was a star, and he's getting parodied. But later in his life, he was like, "Yep, that was my bad. I had to apologize to Al. Like, I was being stupid."
Yeah,
and so that's how a lot of people may have not known. But you know, Gangster's Paradise and Fantastic Voyage.
There's another song that I liked that he had. I'm trying to remember. More of a slower.
There, I'll see you when you get there.
I like that one a lot.
From
like
the Nothing to Lose soundtrack, Martin Lawrence and Tim Robbins.
he's I thought he was fun. I enjoyed his fun hip hop music, you know. And Gangsta Paradise, of course, is the opening star that song. Mm-hmm. I always enjoyed that opening.
He used Stevie Wonder's Pastime Paradise for that song. If you've heard Songs in the Key of Life, Pastime Paradise is on that album. Fantastic Voyage, which is also an interpolation of another song. And yeah, so, you know, kind of sad. There was a rumor when I was in, after I graduated from high school, because he would have, I think Fantastic Voyage would have come out like right after I graduated high school. And somebody had said that he went to my high school for like 3 weeks. I don't know if that's true, because I know he was a SoCal guy. Like I think he's Compton guy. Mm-hmm. But then he had this part where he was just kind of like, I don't know if he was homeless or he was just running around. But somebody had said, yeah, you know, he ended up in the Bay and he went to Mount Pleasant High School for a little while, but, you know, not very long. So I don't know if that was true. I need to figure out. Someone needs to figure out all the places that Coolio lived and see if that was true. But. And another pop culture thing that happened tonight is Aaron Judge hit the 61st home run, ties Roger Maris for the American League home run, most home runs in the American League by a single player. Babe Ruth had 60, and then Maris hit 61, and there was a big hubbub because back in the day, Babe was only playing when it was a 154 game season, and Maris is playing a 162 game, all that nonsense. And the Maris family believes that this is the true home run record when Aaron Judge passes Roger to get to 62. Well, you know, Barry Bonds just had 73 home runs and one of the harder parks to ever hit home runs in Major League Baseball. And, you know, yeah, he was probably on that stuff, but so was everybody else. He was just better than everybody else on that stuff.
I don't believe Aaron Judge is Mr. Squeaky Clean.
Well, that's a tough one, right? Because the testing in baseball is pretty pathetic, actually.
Yeah.
I think you only get tested a few times a year, and it is not, it's like random, but not random. Like they tell you, like, okay, you're going to get tested here on this date. Now go get your test.
I'm telling you what, they're probably not even testing him. If they did, it's probably, there's some shenanigans going on. I had to believe that because baseball cannot use another scandal like that, right? Right now with all the, they're trying to make all these changes and everything.
Yeah.
But look at the guy. The eye test, he looks like he could stand in for the Incredible Hulk and the Avengers if they wanted to.
I want him to come to the Bay Area next year.
Oh, I'm cool. I'm okay. I'm pro steroids. So
yeah,
definitely pro steroids. Go to the Bay Area.
All right. So now on to the wrestling stuff here. Carl Fredrick, someone who we had on our podcast not too long ago, has been spotted at the Performance Center. It doesn't mean that he is in NXT or working with WWE. There was just a report by, looks like PW Insider. He was spotted there, and that was it. But, you know, we talked to Carl, and at that time, he was very much pro New Japan. But soon after our conversation, you know, there were some notes about the G1 and his Twitter and things, and he's no longer with New Japan, so I would not surprise me at all to see him show up on NXT, because he's like, when I first saw him, I was like, man, this guy's perfect for NXT. Like, he just fits everything that they look for in a guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was interest before New Japan with WWE, but he decided to, you know, go to New Japan, give that a shot, and it worked out really well for him for a while. And then, you know, I don't agree with how he handled himself at the end. I thought he was probably getting a little too far ahead of himself.
I thought it was like a gimmick or something, but
no, you know, I think maybe, I don't know if he got just sucked into the hype of the fans on his Twitter page. Like, you know, like, so, I mean, I think he's supposed to win the tag team titles, those strong tag team titles with like Christopher Daniels, I believe, and all that was supposed to happen, but all that got changed. So I don't know. It just, yeah, but, you know, like I said, WWE knows him, all about him, right? And I'm sure either he reached out or they reached out, and we'll see what happens. I do think he's perfect for WWE, and I think he'll do really well there. You still gotta check that ego at the door a bit, though, you know, when you get there too as well. So, but
you know, there's a lot of frustration at that point. I think he probably believes that if not for the pandemic, his trajectory just continues to ascend and ascend and ascend. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic happens. And of course, we know New Japan as a whole, their entire company just went down.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's got to be frustration there. You know, also, there is something to being an American wrestler. Now, Jeff Cobb would know it the best, how to work for a Japanese company while being an American. Jeff mm-hmm. seems to have been so graceful in making that transition, and maybe I would imagine it's pretty hard, and yeah. you know that could also be something. But I've loved this guy ever since I saw him wrestle for APW. You know, when you came back to APW after you were doing Premiere, I think that's when I first noticed him. So mm-hmm. I think he's absolutely 100% yeah. perfect for NXT.
Yeah, I think he's a future star, and you know, if he does sign with WWE, I hope he does well. I like Carl too. Carl's a good guy, always with me, very respectful, and you know, always, you know, worked hard. So I've nothing bad to say to it against Carl. Just want to keep his head straight, keep focused, and he'll. You know, the sky's limit for him.
What do you think about this White Rabbit stuff?
I don't know. I guess this is Bray Wyatt going to show up. They're going to try to reintroduce him, I think, unless it's someone else. And I don't know. I'm not really that hyped into it. If he shows up, he shows up at this point. You know, like, I'm not super excited about it. But I'm just curious of what they're going to do. What's his next reinvention? Can he reinvent himself? Because, unfortunately, you know, the last 6 months, maybe even a year, or maybe even before that, with the whole Seth Rollins Hell in a Cell match in Sacramento, he was kind of fighting an uphill battle. I thought the Fiend gimmick was great, and they had something there, and I just don't think they really did it justice. And supposedly he said that a lot of the bad ideas were Vince's ideas, and of course, right? So, if he comes back and his ideas and what they do is even better, then that might be true. But we'll see. But I don't know. What do you think? Just, are you cool with it, or you're excited about it, or it just doesn't matter to you?
I like the Bray Wyatt character.
Mm-hmm.
I just find the Fiend to be problematic when it comes to booking, because as a heel, he destroys all of your baby faces.
Mm-hmm.
And as a babyface, I kind of wonder if he has to be more Undertaker or more Mankind. Like, there's a little bit of an edge yeah. to him, but the second he loses and the Hocus Pocus stuff is over, it's kind of silly. I don't know. I'm interested to see, just because I know that the guy is pretty creative guy. So I imagine all the time he's been sitting out, he's probably got so many crazy mm-hmm. ideas to yeah. do. And I'm sure it's probably much easier to work with Triple H. But at the same time, imagine the Fiend is back, and like, we got another program with Seth. Like, I would be deathly afraid of that if I was Seth, just because, like, just the idea that the booking, you know, made Seth so, like, Seth is, I mean, I think he's fully recovered now, but
yeah.
It took him a while to recover from that, mm-hmm. that booking. So, yeah, I think you got to be careful with it, but I do think that he is seen as a star, maybe more for a live crowd than anything else. And I would probably not overexpose him. I would probably, you know, keep him in. I don't see, but then again, if you keep him kind of off TV and doing surprise stuff, then
mm-hmm.
he kind of has to win those matches, and he can't just be a regular guy. I don't know. I would go back and kind of see how go through some of the Undertaker bookings and see how they were able, when he was a heel, how were they able to keep him so strong? Well, again, they didn't have TV, like, run, you know, everything wasn't on TV back then.
And fans now, like, he'll show up and get a rig reaction because they know who he is. When Undertaker debuted, he was that was a new gimmick. No one's seen him before. You know, unless you're a fan that followed everything, you knew he was Mean Mark Callis, so you kind of knew him from the NWA. But other than that, a lot of people didn't know he's this fresh new character for the WWF fans. And he debuted in a big way at Survivor Series, never took the pin, even though he didn't, you know, end up winning that match. You know, his team won, but he didn't take a pin or anything. And he just kept winning and kept winning and kept winning and winning for months. And then finally he was doing bigger programs. It's different the different age now. He's got to be really careful. Like, when he debuts, he's going to get a big reaction, right?
Yep.
So who is he go after? Is he going to be a babyface? Is he going to be a heel? Do you maybe bring back Bray Wyatt as a normal guy and get people all hyped up to see this, whatever he's going to be, and he's just a normal guy, and then we start seeing the cracks break with him, and you can kind of bring back Fiend later that way? I don't know. You know, I'm sure he has a lot of creative ideas, but I just want to – I think he's just toned down the hocus pocus. By the way, Hocus Pocus 2 comes out on September 30th on Friday. Big night at our house.
Your wife is so excited.
Oh, yeah, big night at our house. If they can cut out the Hocus Pocus and just make him menacing and evil and dark, you know. And you could do a couple. You could do the old Lights Out and he appears kind of stuff. That's cool. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Well, they're getting way too crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, though? If I never see the lights go out in a building ever again, oh, I know. That's done to
death. It's done to death. I mean, WWE really does it really well, you know. But at the same time, it happens, like, what, at least once a month or more. So
I wonder if – you remember when Finn Balor would wrestle and then, you know, when the Demon came out, you're like, oh – he's not losing this match. This is
Yeah.
I wonder if you could do that with the character a little bit where, you know, Bray Wyatt comes back and, you know, maybe it's not, you know, he's got to be strong. You don't bring him back to just be in the middle, but, you know, all of a sudden loses a match and, you know, they tease the Fiend and the Fiend is the guy who he needs to win the match or something. But I think when you go Fiend 100% of the time, mm-hmm. it's just too hard for the opposition to get over. And I think that could be a problem. And, you know, Triple H also, I think everybody thinks it's Bray, and this is a great exactly what they should do when it comes to these special surprises, right? Like when they debut somebody or when, you know, and when it's a big one, you know, they should tease it so that people feel like they're connecting the dots and they know what's going to happen before it happens, because that's how fans feel smart and they feel connected and they feel engaged when they can kind of put the dots together. Exactly like how CM Punk debuting for AEW, people were so fired up because, like, yes, I'm right. Like, yeah, everyone else was right too, but yeah, you were right. So I like that aspect of it. And I just hope for the guy's sake, because I know that he was kind of beat up as well. Mm-hmm. He's a big dude and,
yeah,
you know, big body. He's carrying a lot of weight there. He's pretty athletic for his size. So I hope that he's also healthy and the years off were good for him, because I know he made a lot of money. So,
yeah,
you know, hopefully he saved his money and he's healthy and he's ready to come back. And it'll be fun. I don't want to feel like 3 months into this thing like, oh gosh, the Fiend again. Like,
it's so tough in this day and age, because it's, you know, when we were younger, it was like we had a couple of squash matches and maybe like a mid-card match. And now it's like every week you got to keep doing something to keep people's interest. And, you know, I do give credit for WWE for being creative when it comes to how they're getting people talking. Like, I thought it was cool. Like, they started stuff on the house shows,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, just playing that song randomly and the lights go dim and then just for no apparent reason, and people started like picking up on it on social media, and then they got the buzz going. So that's cool. That's cool. Like, that's like, I like that. I like to see that creative thinking.
Yes.
With WWE before it was just straight, you know, very formalic, as we always talk about, and sterile many times.
Yeah. All right. And then the last thing before we get into Dynamite is, you know, we'd been hearing about Malakai Black, and I was at All Out when he kind of waved goodbye to the crowd. And I was like, huh, okay, what does that mean? And now it sounds like he's coming back, like he's just taking some time off. And it makes sense because we know that he was signed to a contract. And my whole thing was, wow, if they're going to let him go, what is that non-compete going to be like? Because you can't just let the guy go right back to the other company when Triple H is on his, you know, he's in his bag with bringing back all these NXT guys.
Yeah, you know, these
men and women at NXT. So, but it sounds like he is coming back according to his Instagram. He, you know, of course, he blamed all the... What I guess everyone blames a dirt sheet or the dirt sheets or whatever for the rumors, but yeah, he says he's coming back and not given a release, and the conditional release is completely false. He was just given time off, and that's all. And then our own Big Dave, he said on Monday nights or Sunday nights, Sunday night or Monday night, Wrestling Observer Radio. He said, nobody's getting released. That's the doctrine Tony Khan made very clear, I guess, in the last couple of days. So any of these folks who are unhappy or who we hear are unhappy, we don't know if they're unhappy for sure, but that's the word that is getting around. It sounds like Tony is not going to be Mr. Nice Guy when it comes to letting people out of their contracts, which is, I mean, in the wrestling world, it's probably the right thing. Yeah. Though, you know, I always lean a little bit towards the talent when it comes to this stuff, because there's tons of different reasons why someone may be unhappy. Could be related to push. It could be related to their schedule. It could be related to just not getting along with certain people. Like we've heard all the stories and the myriad of reasons why this could happen. And, you know, WWE itself has not been the nice guy in that situation very often either. So it didn't seem like that was going to happen very much with AEW, and that's the confirmation that it's not.
Yeah. I'm like you, I lean toward the talent too, but you know, with Mustafa Ali, like people were like, just let him out, but don't hold him hostage, you know? And now stuff's happening like that in AEW. And I get why Tony Khan doesn't want to, because they show up on Raw or SmackDown and it makes them look bad. Maybe Malakai has come to agreement with Tony that maybe he'll come back for a shorter period of time and you know, maybe they get an earlier release that way. I don't know. But sounds like he wants to leave. He might have been frustrated. I don't know for sure. I'm just connecting, like trying to like look what he's been doing. You know, he started out great with Cody and that whole thing. Like he felt like, oh man, this guy's gonna be a main eventer. And after that feud with Cody, he just kind of was piddling with mid-carders. The whole thing of the Varsity Blondes to get Julie in their group took forever to happen. And you know, I know what, he was injured or something like that for a bit, but it just, they seem to be kind of cold, you know. And so I can see probably frustration after, you know, being coming in so hot, you know, but that happens in AEW a lot. Like a lot of guys coming hot and gals coming hot.
Britt made a reference to it today in her promo. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, no, I did. That was really good. You know, Ruby Riott, et cetera. I mean, the list goes on. They start off hot and they kind of just become, you know, part of the background. So
I still think there's a badass match coming if everyone's healthy and everyone's coming back. I still want to see him and Miro. Like, I thought they were building that up.
Yeah. And where's like, Miro?
I don't know.
And when we were talking about stuff like people, I know because of the hurricane, a lot of people couldn't make TV.
Yeah.
Right?
I wonder if that was the reason why we got sort of a different type of show than AEW.
Not really,
because
this was advertised for the last few days of guys like Bandit Juice was advertised the week before.
Those two matches were definitely advertised, but what we didn't get were the cutaways and the promos going into commercial and the shorter segments where it's just like goes boom, 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 boom. We had much longer segments tonight.
Yeah.
Like there were some segments where I was like looking at my watch going like, my God, this thing's been like almost a half an hour.
We had a few a couple short segments. We had a lot of more video packages,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if this is a, new trend that they're going to Tony Khan wants to do. And this is a I hope it continues, because I think showing Moxley winning the title last week, showing the Acclaimed, I think they won the title, showed either that, showing more video packages with, like, God, was it Darby and Jay Lethal? But they had a promo. I guess that's kind of what they normally do. But I liked, like, the video packages. I think they had to talk about stuff that happened, you know, last week and remind people. And, you know, they got a good production team that, you know, might use it.
And what I do wonder is if they did have a smaller roster, and we don't know who was missing or not. Like, I mean, we could probably go through the roster and go, mm-hmm. is that a Florida person or not? But I didn't do that. I just looked at the way that the show was being booked and thought, oh, like, this segment is longer because it's probably taking place of something else that was supposed to be here originally.
Well, Miro doesn't live in Florida. I believe he lives in Nashville or somewhere in Tennessee. So, I don't know. He hasn't been on TV. I think I asked the group, like, has anyone heard he's been hurt or anything? Because that guy just had this momentum, and he just, we haven't seen him, you know, since, what, the pay-per-view, I think it was, you know.
So. I mean, we know, he's told us what he's doing if he's not on TV.
I know, he's with the wife.
He's hanging out with the wife.
Yeah, but.
So that's what he's doing, I guess, getting paid to hang out with his wife.
Yeah.
All right, let's start this show. The thing that I think I made sure to write down was, like, super long segments, which is not normally their gig, and it made for a different show. I don't know if it made for a better show, but you could feel it a little bit, and they gave some opportunities to folks who they don't usually give opportunities to, especially on the mic. We'll get there with Mr. Wheeler Yuta.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to compare this completely, but it did feel more like a WWE paced show than an AEW paced show, for better or for worse. Like, there were moments where I was like, I'm expecting something to happen, and it didn't happen, just because that's the way AEW is paced, and it didn't happen. And for, like I said, for better or for worse, whatever way, whatever style of wrestling that you like better, if you like the quick cutaways and the, you know, let's not let this breathe aspect that usually happens on Dynamite, you did not get that style of Dynamite tonight. So,
yeah, the show dragged a bit, but I think too, we just came off last week was a bigger show that was almost like a.
And next week is the anniversary show.
They're throwing a lot on that show as well. So, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a dip, I think, between those two shows.
So we started off the show with a Jericho Appreciation Society celebration. Everyone, the guys were wearing violet velvet suits.
Yeah.
I don't think the women were wearing velvet, but they definitely, they weren't wearing velvet, but they were definitely wearing the violet blazers. And so the most grotesque, like, if you have a high definition television or a 4K television, which, you know, most of us probably do these days, this thing was bright.
Yeah.
You've had to turn down the contrast a little bit on your TV. They opened up doing the bloodline thing about appreciate us. The pizza guy was with them.
Ugh, God, that guy.
Daniel Garcia was the biggest baby face to me when he knocked out the pizza guy. Jericho buried ROH as the ROH champion. Nobody knows ROH.
And so he
gives Garcia a present, and Garcia pulls it out, and it's like a 1985 style LL Cool J bucket hat in the violet color. And I don't know why Garcia was really mad about it. Like, what was he expecting? Like, was he expecting, like, because I thought it was going to be worse. I thought he's going to get a picture. Remember when The Rock gave Farouk a picture of himself? That's what I thought it was going to be. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool bucket hat. And then he's mad and he throws it down. Like I said, he punches the pizza guy, biggest baby face. Pizza guy has to sell this thing for like 15 minutes, just laying out on the floor. Jericho looks at Garcia and he's like, tell me, are you a pro wrestler or are you a sports entertainer? And this is when Bryan Danielson comes out. Garcia gets his nice little break here with the microphone. And he asked if the fans would be entertained by a few things. And he started to reel off some not entertaining things in this list. He said, would you be entertained if me and Justin Roberts were a tag team? I was like, no, that'd probably be really bad. Like, why would we be entertained?
Fans are still cheering everything he was saying, though.
Yeah. Would you be entertained if I was flipping pizza dough with the pizza guy who's dead on the floor because you punched him? I was like, no, that would be really, really bad. And then he finally said, would you be entertained if I tag team with Danielson against Sammy and Jericho? I was like, yeah. Okay. One out of three ain't bad here, buddy.
Yeah.
So then Daddy Magic gets upset. He wants to fight Danielson, and Danielson's like, oh, well, guess what? They told me to come out here and that I could have a match with anybody I want. So why don't we have it with you, Daddy Magic? And Daddy Magic was not as excited when he heard that. So Danielson can make his own matches now. And he had a match with Daddy Magic. It was not great, I would say. Not the greatest Danielson match. Cesaro came out to run off Parker. And then we never saw Cesaro ever again. So that was his big spot on this show, which is kind of interesting because I feel like this show could have used a Cesaro match. Like a Cesaro match would not have been a bad thing for this show. Mm-hmm. Finally, Danielson wins with the LaBelle lock. This entire thing took 25 minutes, yeah. I believe, of the opening segment. And I'm guessing because it's the show's a little bit different than if they had the entire roster, but that's what we got. Opening segment, Jericho Appreciation Society.
Yeah, this thing dragged. The Jericho Appreciation Society, as you saw, or the Jericho's championship win celebration, just kind of dragged for me. But the audience there was really into Garcia and with him, so it. You know, for them it was good, but for me I wasn't feeling it. Plus, that once I see the pizza guy, I'm like, come on, why we got that guy out there? You know, there's a reason why there's a lot of people unhappy in that company that won't release this because they can't get on TV. But you know, just because a guy has a popular gif on Twitter, Tony's gonna book him, put him on TV. This guy's been featured a lot more than the Miro. You know,
bring the Michael Jackson guy in. I saw him tease a dive and then he just moonwalked after he teased the dive. Like, that's better than this pizza guy.
He might be old news now. I don't know. So, you know, I guess I can understand. Like, you can't even make catering jokes on AEW television anymore because half the people aren't catering and are all pissed off as well. So, and then it was kind of weird, like, the transition from, like, this interview segment to the match. They go, like, Bryan Danielson's like, okay, let's do it. And they go, all right. And they go to, like, Taz and Excalibur and Tony Schiavone. Yeah. And they're running down the show tonight, the matches we're going to see, and then they cut back to Danielson versus Menard, and like, I'm guessing like they wanted Danielson music to keep playing during that break, but the sound guy forgot and just kind of turns on the music quick and it turns it back off, and Taz and Excalibur were just cracking each other up. Like they thought they were doing dark, you know, in this episode, and actually make Excalibur a little more entertaining to me, but it was, and the match was okay. Wasn't Danielson's best. I think Matt Menard is rusty. He just came back from an injury, mm-hmm. and he looked off. There's a spot where Parker DTs Danielson on the floor, and he rolls in Danielson, and then Menard just picks him Danielson up and goes for the powerbomb. I think you got to go for the pin there, because once you go for the powerbomb after that, like you kind of lose. He lost the fans. He didn't get a big reaction. The most exciting part of this match was actually Claudio coming down, you know, chasing down Parker, giving the European uppercut and carrying him off. That's the most exciting part of the match. And that's kind of sad to say for a Danielson match. So, it was okay, the match itself.
All right, we got a Jon Moxley versus Juice Robinson video package, as that was the first hour main event match there. Mm-hmm. Then we got an MJF video package from Grand Slam with him and Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler Yuta had a mic, a live mic, and he went out there, very passionate promo. Yeah. He's in front of his hometown crowd, and I felt a little bad because this dude's voice squeaked like three times during this promo.
Sound like he just hit puberty.
Right. And, you know, again, it's like his big moment. I didn't think his promo was fantastic, but I liked the passion part of it. But when his voice squeaks, it seems, you know, it's really, it doesn't mean anything necessarily. It just means that his voice squeaked. But when it comes to him trying to connect with this audience, really for, you know, I don't know, he's probably cut a handful of promos, but really this was like his chance to really connect and really, really get out there. And plus, he's going head to head with the best promo guy in the entire company. So he obviously wants to stand out in that way. And so when his voice kept squeaking, it was almost like a, what do you call it? Like,
nails on a chalkboard?
No, it's like, you know, when we used to watch ESPN back in the day, they used to have the football follies and they used to show like all the goofy stuff. Like, it's like an outtake, right? It's like if you were to do, this was a taped thing, you'd edit that part out and have him do it again because it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it sounded like Jason Sensation doing Owen Hart out there. No, that's good.
MJF comes out and he kind of shows him how to cut a proper big time money promo. Then MJF takes a shot at my guy, Joe Frazier. What did Joe do, man? He's trying to go at the Philadelphia fans.
Yeah,
I was expecting Rocky Balboa was next, but he didn't take a shot at Rocky.
And unfortunately, it sounds like none of these fans who knew Joe Frazier was, sadly, from the lack of reaction there.
Yeah, he probably should have gone with like a more updated reference like Joel Embiid or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but Wheeler's tired of talking and he wants to fight. As he walks towards MJF, the Gunn brothers come out. They got MJF's back. And I thought, Cesaro was just out in the previous segment. Where is he to get his boy Wheeler's back?
He's still carrying Parker.
MJF said, nope, I'm not fighting in Philly. We're going to fight in Dumpy DC. As we know, that is the next, that is the anniversary show. Their very first Dynamite was in Washington, D.C. And then MJF said, you know, Philadelphia, you're not even good enough for my catchphrase. So he had the Gunn brothers do his catchphrase, and he was going to hang out in the suite to watch Jon Moxley and Juice Robinson have a terrible wrestling match.
Yeah, yeah. You know, MJF, to me, saved this. You know, I think Wheeler gave it a little college try.
Absolutely.
You know? And you know, it's tough. You know, you're not a talker and you're putting this position. It's tough, but, you know, he did it. He's lucky he did it in front of his hometown crowd. They were a little more with him and stuff. But, you know, MJF saves it. He saves every segment.
Yeah, for sure. Jay Lethal video package for his match with Darby Allin. Now we get Juice versus Mox. And, you know, it's only the third segment, but because the first segment went so long, this is the end of the first hour. So Mox walks, you know, through the crowd, and he doesn't have his eye on Juice, and he's kind of celebrating in the crowd a little bit. And Juice jumps him as he comes over the rail. Lots of mano-a-mano stuff. I know not John LaRocca's favorite kind of stuff, where you just let the other guy punch you and forearm you, and you both try and clothesline the hell out of each other without protecting yourself. And then Juice calls it out by yelling Moxley's name. And I mean, it's a nice little communication thing because, you know, Moxley's like...
This is a Japanese thing.
Well, but Moxley's like, oh, he's calling out my name. Double clothesline to the chest. after the clotheslines that they couldn't knock each other down with those clothesline, Mox kind of suckered him and hits a cutter for a two. Juice hits the pulp friction for a two on his own. And then Mox quickly with the armbar, and Juice does not let this armbar sink very, very much. He just quickly submits, and Mox gets the win. And after the match, Paige comes out. He goes nose to nose with Mox, like really close. Like these guys are like almost lips touching. Mox is bleeding. I don't even know where he got. Did that had to be hard way, the way that he got cut.
No. He bladed after during a commercial break when Juice threw him over the announcer's table or the thank you table.
Okay, I thought it was Hardway because it just wasn't impressive. Like, no, it wasn't. It's
Philadelphia. Your Mox has to bleed.
So they're about to fight, and then MJF all of a sudden just got a microphone in his suite. He starts to cut a promo on those guys, and then he turns around and Jason from Friday the 13th is behind him. It's actually Wheeler Yuta jumps MJF and they fight in the suite and he dumps MJF into the stands and MJF is pissed because the security didn't protect him and they're setting up their match for next week.
Think they didn't get the Philly Fanatic to show up in the booth to annoy freaking MJF during the whole match with Moxley and it ends up being Wheeler Yuta.
That'd have been funny.
You know, because he's just, you know, bagging on Philly so much. The match did not like. So apparently Juice is really a free agent, I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah, so, and I'm thinking, like, first of all, I don't understand the match. Like, this is Juice's first match in AEW, and he's getting beat. Like,
Eliminator. It's a title eliminator match.
I'm not a fan of this. I'm not a fan of these, just having these guys appear and lose and I don't think Juice was impressed enough to even get a job here. I think because Juice, I don't think he's a heel. I think he performs better as a babyface, in my opinion. So in this match, it wasn't my cup of tea.
He lost his mojo somewhere.
Yeah, he did. I think what gets him over the fans is that over the top charisma, that fun attitude. But then the class, you know, he's a good babyface, sells good, makes a good comeback. As a heel, he loses all that, and it's not for the better. You see that spot where Juice tackles Mox to the rope, and they go tumbling through the ropes.
Oh yeah,
and it looked like Juice got the worst end, but then Mox pops to his feet, and he's like stumbles and just sits down in the guardrail, so Juice can do his little cannonball. And that's when they went to break, and that's when because I was watching on real time, so I actually saw the picture stuff, and that's when I saw Mox get thrown over the table and, you know, comes up, you know, bleeding. So but yeah, I was not impressed with Juice, and I just don't, if they do sign him, where do you go from here? You know, just very strange. I don't like starting people out like that, especially if there's someone I'm potentially going to be using in the future. I don't know if they are going to sign him, but I would think Tony probably will sign this guy.
You know, if we go back to that Forbidden Door, who were the guys that came through the Forbidden Door that you really, really want to see again? Obviously, Okada. Mm-hmm. I think Tanahashi to an extent, especially for us. Like, we love Tanahashi. I don't know about, you know, newer AEW fans who may not be also New Japan fans. They might just see an older guy. Will Ospreay. Obviously, I think he's a guy who you want to see again.
Naito, probably.
But Naito hasn't even been here.
Yeah,
so,
no, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see him, and maybe they do something with Andrade and you know, those guys too, because of the little connection, you know, with the group.
Naito's like, nah. I ain't going to where Andrade's at, you know, like on the card. He's not coming down for that.
Come on, man. He could have been the peacemaker between Butcher and the Blade and the Private Party.
How sad was that segment?
Well, the segment was only there so that they could get one line in.
Yeah.
So, the little cute line. Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, that there's not that many guys, I think, in that Forbidden Door thing who are you're just like, wait, like, I can't wait for that guy to come back. Because, you know, Juice had this one match, and I was like, I like Juice.
Yeah.
But I like the Juice of 2 years ago or 3 years ago way better than the Juice now.
What about that match with Jay White, the Cow Palace?
Yeah.
Remember when he won the U.S. title? That was
absolutely
a big moment. And
Jay White's another one, though. His gimmick works a lot better in New Japan than it works in AEW.
I think, honestly, after the whole Forbidden Door pay-per-view, the excitement of New Japan and AEW, it's done. I mean,
do another show.
The only guy I think that can really hold that, like, oh, man, if it's Okada, right? I think Okada is the guy that would be a big deal. I'm sure they'll do another show, but
I mean, if you put Shingo in a main event type of match, I think he'll be much more over than he was in his role. But yeah, you know, I think they'll mix it up a little bit. But I guess my point was is that because Tony's tweet today mentioned the Forbidden Door. I think he had a photo of like him and Moxley, and it might have been Ghetto in the photo. And I was like, oh yeah, because of Juice, cool. But like, you know, the idea of the Forbidden Door, like, you know, months ago was like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And now it's just like, oh yeah, it just happens. Like, you know, no build, cold, or 1 week build, I guess, but still kind of cold at the same time. No big deal.
I'm just for Juice. I mean, coming, if he's apparently he's a free, like I said, he's a free agent, gets his opportunity, but your opportunities, you're going to lose on national television on your first match. It's not like Juice, when you negotiate with Tony, is like, not like Tony does not know his reputation, right? He doesn't have to really earn a spot. Like, you know, his body of work the last 4 or 5 years, you can tell this guy has talent. And, you know, I don't know if I would debut him to lose like this. That just doesn't benefit him. But maybe they're not going to sign him. It's just a one and done deal. It could have been when, you know, who came in? Cobb, he lost one match in, right? Stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm still not a big fan of that. You know, I'm just not a big fan. If you're going to, if they say he's all elite like tomorrow, I'm like, what the hell is that match for? You know? So.
All right. We had a Bandido versus Jericho video package. So, because this was Bandido's first AEW match, right?
Yeah, we're getting to that. A lot to say about that match.
And then there was a video package of Saraya, her debut last week. And then we had the segment that I'm still trying to figure out what they wanted to do here. They still haven't told us what Saraya is going to do, whether she's going to become a wrestler. She mentioned having a conversation with Tony, and Tony listened to her. And if I'm Tony, I'm like, no, I'm not taking credit for listening to her for that idea.
Well, Tony listens for two meetings, and then he has the assistants just block for.
So Saraya comes out and just basically like, you know, I am the revolution and all this stuff, and you know, nice little babyface promo. But then she goes, "Why don't all the women come out?" And so you get all the babyface women. Toni Storm comes out. Who was with Toni Storm? Willow was out there.
My girl Willow.
Sky Blue and Athena was also out there.
Sky Blue, some horrible makeup. What was she out doing? She's just messing around like, oh, they use me.
Well, I wonder if she was trying to change her look a little bit because she did look a lot different. Yeah. And the other one was
Madison Rain.
Yeah. So they were all out there.
Okay, from what I was getting from this promo from Saraya, or whatever, Saraya, whatever. She got pissed off. I don't say her name right.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Saraya,
the artist formerly known as Paige in WWE. From what I gather, she's going to do a commission role because she can't wrestle right now. She's not cleared, apparently.
So, yeah, so that's my question is she going to be like the women's commissioner and she can make matches? Because the match that was set up for the night was Toni Storm against Serena Deeb. And after the babyface women came out, then the heel women came out. And that's when Britt cuts the promo and says, oh, look what we have here. A shiny new toy.
Because that's what everyone says. You know?
And so then she makes a neck joke about poor Saraya. Yeah. And so Saraya goes, you know, Tony, you know, I had a conversation with Tony and you know, he listened to me. And we're going to make this a lumberjack match. And I was like, I should have seen it coming because you had all the women out there. But I'm not sure this makes a Serena Deeb versus Toni Storm match necessary or better. Like, why does Britt care if Serena Deeb wins? Or, you know, why does Willow Nightingale care if Toni Storm wins? So there was a real disconnect for me there.
Yep.
And then, it didn't really affect the match in any way either. Like, there was a couple of little things that happened, but it wasn't like something happened with the lumberjacks and Taz tried to call them the Lumberjills, thinking that he was being a smart guy. She's like, nope, they're lumberjacks. And yeah. then she just wins with the pile driver from, was it the top or the middle rope or whatever?
Middle rope.
So
that was the biggest reaction to match guy.
That was a big move
and a risky move. And, you know, that was scary, but it looked cool. No one cared. This whole thing killed this match. I felt bad for Toni Storm and Serena Deeb. I think on their own, as advertised, none of this BS, they would have had a really good match that the crowd could have got into.
100%.
They're both really good. And I was just like, and then like, okay, so from Shreya's promo, excuse me, I got that she's probably going to be in this kind of commissioner role or, you know, the matchmaker of the AEW women's division because she's going to bring change. I felt like it's like when you give direction to talent to go do and they kind of don't say exactly what you wanted to say. This kind of feel like happened with Tony's direction to her because she was going long. She said, like, I guess someone was telling her, hurry up, go to the next thing because we got to have the other women coming out. And she was like, don't wrap me up. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, what? You just be professional and just go with it. So I'm like, okay, she's going to be in that role. She can't wrestle right now. She's going to be the commissioner for the women's division. But then on commentary, she is flat out saying she wants Toni Storm to win. So how can you be a matchmaker or a commissioner of a division if you're rooting for certain individuals to win matches?
Well, and it's not like – I could see if it was against Britt because Britt just slammed her.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't against Britt. Yeah, the whole thing was weird. Saraya, 0-for-1 in your commissioner role. You're no better than Commissioner Slaughter here.
Why Vince didn't listen to her.
Okay, so then we get an Acclaimed interview, and Keith Lee comes out. Keith Lee is the
Translate this for me.
Keith Lee is the most honest and truthful guy on this whole show. He said to Billy Gunn that Billy Gunn is the one who carried the Acclaimed and gave them the title.
He said they got carried. Is it carried by Lee and Strickland or Gunn carried them?
I think he said because Billy Gunn interfered that he carried them.
Did he say Strickland's not there because he's sexually frustrated?
Not sexually. He said something else. It was not sexual.
I rewound it 4 times. I could not hear it. I was like, God, I hope Garrett.
I didn't write it down. No, I didn't write it down. Because Keith Lee's gimmick is like he's the soft teddy bear. But he has pretty good vocabulary, so he used a nice vocabulary word. Triple letter score or triple word score in Scrabble, he probably would have gotten 40 points or something.
I feel like he had like someone you ever talk to someone that has a chew in their mouth? That's what it felt like when he came out there. Like he's like, and that was it. And I was like, I felt the Acclaimed looked like just that's this big win. I kind of like to see. I think this was pre-taped. Obviously, yeah. I don't know if they were even there, which is unfortunate because maybe because of the hurricane they couldn't be there. But if they were there, you have to do a live deal, right?
Yeah.
Like with that crowd and just get some catchphrases and get, I don't know, just.
So I think the idea that Billy Gunn interfered here, I kind of wonder, and this might just be because of what you and I are watching with 1998 Raw and DX is ripping and running through that whole show. But I also just recently watched the DX A&E biography. And so I have DX on the mind. And I wonder if, even though Acclaimed as the baby faces and they still had the interference, they're trying to be like the DX of AEW, where they're a little more edgy. They don't really care. They're anti, you know, management or whatever. And, you know, because there is the connection there is Billy Gunn, also part of DX. So I wonder if there's something with that. But when Keith Lee just told the truth, I was like, gosh darn it, Keith Lee is 100% right. This was why I was so frustrated about that match last week. And it just reminded me why I didn't like the finish. And then it wasn't even to build up a rematch, like because the next match with the Acclaimed is on Rampage, right? So they would have had to be there. Yeah, they would have had to be there. So they're gonna do their live thing on Rampage, I guess.
Yeah, that was it. Rampage has.
We'll get to it. It's not the greatest show by any means.
But wouldn't it be cool if Keith Lee came in a little bit of House of Fire and be like, you know, he say, hey, you guys won because Billy Gunn got involved. That's why you're champions. And I'm going to handle you. We, Strickland and I, will handle you guys later and we'll get those belts back soon. But first off, I'm challenging you, Billy Gunn, to a match. You don't kind of want to see Billy Gunn versus Keith Lee in a match. Yeah. Maybe they're going to get there eventually, but I kind of just set it up there, really.
Yeah. All right. Private Party and Butcher and Blade were in the back, upset with each other. We don't know what they were upset about, unless it happened on something else that I didn't
see. They're upset that Andrade hasn't got them on television. And they got this damn pizza guy last couple weeks. It's getting all their TV time.
So Andrade chews out Private Party. He's like, I'm the boss. Like, you guys, what are you guys doing? And then he walks off with Butcher and Blade, and then he gets the other guy. Who's the crony?
Jose the assistant.
Yeah, he gets the assistant to chew Private Party out again. And Matt Hardy.
He's just sitting there.
Shows up. Well, because then Shivani. He like, the segment was going to be over, but Shivani's like, hey, hang on here, Private Party. I want to ask you guys something. And then that's when Matt Hardy comes in, and he says the line about, like, if you can get out of your contracts or whatever.
You can come with me, and I'll give you 20% like I did last time.
Yeah, and he says, you know, he wants to steal them back. He wants to prove to them that, you know, he won't screw them like he did last time. So
What if Shivani was like, hey, guys, hang back. You guys got a change for the vending machine right here?
I thought you said, you know, you got a cigarette. You got one of them funky cigarettes for me?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm a little hurt from when MJF pushed me last week.
No, he goes like, hey, man, thanks for that Trina's CD. Now I get it. She's the baddest bitch.
Yeah. That if he pulls out his Walkman tape and some headphones. All right. Next match was Ricky Starks against Eli Isom.
Yeah.
And this was a squash. So we got to see Ricky get a quick win. And then that was it, right? Like, he didn't do anything else.
I don't mind a quick win, but poor Eli Isom's a good young talent in ROH. And, you know, I know they're in Philadelphia. I think he's from Philadelphia, but fuck, we had anyone else that could do that job. I feel like, you know, Eli has some real talent, in my opinion. And he was one of the highlights in the last year of ROH, like his ascension up, right? Mm-hmm. And I was kind of bummed to see him lose like that. You know, he's the guy that I would think Tony would want on the ROH roster. Who knows? Actually, we're just burying ROH at this point. I think Tony has buyer's remorse now.
I don't know, man. Jericho said that nobody knows ROH. So maybe he's like, nobody knows what ROH is. We're going to build it from the ground up.
Oh, God.
All right. On Rampage, we have John Silver versus Roosh. We have The Acclaimed versus Butcher and The Blade and The Private Party. So did Andrade, did something off camera where he's got both of the teams who are pissed off at each other in a title match? Like, he's pulling strings or something, because he's got, or why the hell were these guys mad at each other?
Yeah, they should be happy. Like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, what they should have done, they should have maybe had it be Acclaim versus Butcher and The Blade, and that's why The Private Party is upset, because why they should get, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Fuck. Who knows?
I mean, like I said, it's possible that something could happen on Twitter, something could have happened on a different show that I just didn't watch, so I don't know. Willow versus Jamie Hayter, that should be actually a pretty fun match.
Yeah, always good to see Jamie.
Hook appears, and then...
and disappears.
and then Lee Moriarty versus Fuego del Sol.
That's what I texted my buddy, and I said, set your DVRs. Lee Moriarty versus Fuego del Sol is coming at you in Rampage.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I thought we were going to get some better Rampages, especially after the Grand Slam Rampage did a pretty good number by comparison to what Rampage has been doing. But it seems like We're going to go back to what it was before, because I'm not impressed. Unless there's something with the Acclaim there where, you know, the fans are going to tune in to see them. But I don't know about that match.
Yeah, we need more Dr. Luther.
I saw him.
Yeah?
He wrestled.
Was he taking tickets for you? Or...
No. When I was at All Out, was it on the Friday, the Rampage? No, I'm trying to think about this. Okay, yeah. Friday Rampage, I think he wrestled on Dark.
Yeah.
This would have been like 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I did see him. He's still there.
Was he better live than he's on video? Or
man, Jeremy and I were so frustrated after like the third Dark match. We just got up and started walking around the arena.
I would have done the same thing. I would have been tugging on you guys. Let's go now.
Yeah.
Because Luther.
Yeah.
Oh, let's wait to see this match, actually. Oh, Luther.
Dynamite next week, the anniversary show. Mm-hmm. MJF versus Wheeler Yuta, which they've been building up for 2 weeks now. I imagine the match will be pretty good. And I guess it is also going to be... is it Scissor Me Day in DC next Wednesday?
Bring your scissor shirts. Bring your big scissors. Yeah, that's gonna be a party. I guess who's gonna interrupt it? I guess in the Gun Club.
Yeah,
maybe FTR.
Or maybe
we got all these belts and we're
Swerve is back from being frustrated.
Right. Sexually frustrated. I don't know how he is. He's dating Jessica Mann. My goodness,
who's he dating?
I think he's taking Jessica Maia.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So.
Wow. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, she's doing good. I don't know her.
Has she been wrestling?
I think she's done a couple of indie dates.
Okay.
I believe so. Yeah.
Oh, good for her. And then Luchasaurus in action, plus that what followed was Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian video package. And then Darby against Jay Lethal and Garcia and Danielson versus Jericho and Guevara. I don't know if that's the main event or not, but I would imagine it's either that or MJF versus Wheeler Yuta. And then we get the main event, Bandido versus Chris Jericho. Now, we had this discussion, I think it was on the last show that we did. You're not the biggest fan of the true Chris Jericho Appreciation Society matches, which is Jericho facing all of these different kind of wrestlers who can do all these great spots, and Jericho will do them, you know, for the beginning of the match, and then it turns into a very much of a Chris Jericho match. Mm-hmm. I liked this for what it was. Bandido had some really friggin' cool moves. There was the moonsault follow-away slam from off the top rope, and then there was that 21-plex. I hate that move, man. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I've seen Bandido ROH matches, but you know, seeing the 21-plex, I didn't really see where they were going with that move. That was cool, and then you know he held Jericho in a vertical suplex. It was more like a diagonal suplex for about 45 seconds. So they did some stuff, but it definitely turned into a Jericho match. Now, the part that I didn't like, this dude poked Bandido right in the eyes, right in front of Aubrey, and got away with it, pulled Bandito's mask over his eyes, goes for the walls of Jericho, but Bandido, who is blinded just by touch and feel, grabs the small package.
That was a cool spot, though. Yeah. That was probably the best thing on this match.
For a two count. And then Jericho goes high on the Lion Tamer for the win. After the match, he cuts a promo and calls it the Ring of Jericho. He's changing what it is and is desecrating its legacy. He's going to beat all the former champs. He wants Danielson in Toronto, October 12th. Says he's going to destroy everything about ROH, including the announcers and the ring announcer. And poor Bobby Cruz is like, huh? Looks, boom, eats the elbow, gets the Shivani treatment, and then the show goes off the air.
Yeah. I guess Danielson's going to beat him, right, in Toronto, right? You can't have Danielson, can't lose again to Jericho, I would hope.
I don't know, man.
And maybe,
Jericho said he's going to beat all the champs. Danielson's a former champ.
I just don't know. I don't like this storyline. I just think it makes ROH look so second rate. It already is when, you know, they have no show and it's on the, you know, just no one really cares about ROH. It's just muddling up everything. I didn't like this match. I thought this, because I was looking at it's another guy, Bandido, who's a free agent, has this match. He does all his moves. Jericho kicks out of all of them. Jericho taps him out clean in the middle. Like, what does this guy benefit from? Like, it's like, God, these people don't know how to protect themselves anymore.
He's just the former champ.
He's the former champ.
He's going on the list.
And like, God, that op, like when Jericho does the handshake, but then makes it into like a funny joke. And then Bandido just throws these three poorly looking punches. Oh my God, it looks so bad. It was embarrassing. You know, I like Bandido, but I think he got to really edit him down and like, make him do his best stuff in spots. Jericho, like the stuff with Jericho looked off. I mean, you know, he looked slow. And I think he got his bell rung a few times. One, for sure, on that crucifix bomb, that didn't look good because he barely kicked out, if he even did kick out of that. And then also when Jericho's going to the top rope and then Bandido went for that step-up enziguri while Jericho was like, getting on the top rope and kicks Jericho right in the fucking mouth, dude. Like, holy cow. Yeah, I just don't understand, like, getting beat so flat like that. Just blows my mind. Like, this is a guy that – remember, this is a guy AEW wanted. Bandido. They wanted him from the go, but then he signed with ROH.
He was – wasn't he in –
All In.
The original First, All In.
Yeah, and that 6-minute main event with the Bucks and everyone else.
Ray. I think Ray Ray was in that match.
Yeah, too. Yeah. I think the Bucks were trying to really feature Bandido because it's the guy they wanted. And I don't know. And I'm not a big fan of that 21, what do you call it? 21 Xplex or whatever you call it. Because the guy taking it has to sit there with his asshole out, wait for him to run, grab his way, jump up, spring, and you're just sitting there like an idiot, right? And I'm just like, I just don't like that move, right? I just don't like it. Just looks dumb. Looks dumb to me. But
all right, so if this storyline is correct, we know all the guys who Jericho's going to have to go through, right?
He's probably not going to beat Punk, whatever okay, happens wait, to Punk.
We got to start with Loki. First ever ROH champion.
He passed away. Loki?
No, he's alive. What do you mean?
No, Loki. Loki coming to this job? I don't know. He's kind of a head case, you know. But at least this way, he'd be smart to not do it. I don't think, you know.
Did Xavier pass away?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Oh, yeah. He did 2 years ago during the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Samoa Joe is probably not going to be Samoa Joe.
Samoa Joe. Austin Aries.
Nigel McGuinness can't wrestle and is working for WWE.
James Gibson.
Austin Aries. No one likes him.
Homicide.
James Gibson works for eight. Homicide might come in.
Morishima.
He's not wrestling.
Jerry Lynn's right there.
Is Jerry Lynn ROH champion?
He was ROH champion for a total of 71 days.
Yeah, okay. You know, he's retired.
Seth Rollins.
He's doing bigger and better things.
Roddy Strong. Maybe they bring Roddy Strong in for...
He's injured for a very long time.
Is he really?
He's hurt right now.
You can't like break news and then no sell.
I don't know. He's hurt. I don't know. Remember they took him out.
Eddie Edwards.
He might come from Impact as a loner.
Davey Richards.
Davey could do it.
Davey held the belt for almost a whole year.
Davey Michael Elgin. yeah. He's too busy trying to steal protein.
Kevin Owens not. Jay Briscoe. Adam Cole's there. He's hurt, but Adam Cole's
Jay Briscoe
there.
Might be brought in. But he's probably too smart to do it. I hope he's too smart to do a job to Jericho like he's Jericho's beating Bandido. My goodness gracious.
Jay Lethal. Kyle. Kyle's going to be out for a bit, but Kyle's on this list.
Kyle's out for a long time.
Christopher Daniels is on this list. Cody's on this list, but Cody's in WWE. Dalton Castle. I just saw Dalton Castle on Rampage.
Dalton Castle was on Rampage in that Battle Royal for some reason.
Matt Taven.
Taven is an Impact, but he could probably come in and do it. I don't know.
PCO.
PCO would do it. But I think, how many weeks until the Toronto show? Like 4 weeks? 3 weeks?
3 weeks. Two weeks.
Yeah, this is. I can't see Danielson losing again unless they have some kind of. Well, the gimmick is Jericho has no honor. So yeah. He can definitely get a fuck finish there. So I'm guessing that's what we'll. Okay, we could probably get that. But what does this do for ROH? Do you think this really helps the brand or does. I think it hurts it.
I have no idea.
Yeah, who knows?
Everyone asked, like, everyone who I know who's like a really big ROH fan back in the day, I can't relate because. I wasn't into the buying the DVDs because this is a time where, you know, when ROH kicks off, like I have two little kids. I'm barely able to watch WWE TV at this point. And they never ran the West Coast, like maybe like two or three times ever. And so I never got to see them. So, yeah, I don't really have a big opinion. Like I watched some shows, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't that big of a fan because I just couldn't watch it.
I would get every once in a while, if there was a certain match that people were really raving about, I would try to get a tape of or somehow some video trading or something. Not in video trading. I don't know how I got them, but I'm trying to remember. I remember my favorite RH match was Brian Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness, the title for title one.
Mm-hmm.
That match was good. I remember having that. DVD. I don't know how I got it. I don't know how I got that damn DVD, but I remember watching it like, oh my God. I seen like the Punk versus Samoa Joe matches. I seen Cook Joke, but I seen a lot of the Joe stuff, but I was never like a hardcore ROH guy.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few DVDs. I think I have whenever they'd get guys from Japan, I would try and watch those shows because, you know, just reading them in the Observer, they sounded so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, you know, I have maybe four ROH DVDs, and two of them are Samoa Joe versus CM Punk matches, I think.
Yeah, well, we'll see how this ends. I just don't think it's going to end up with ROH in a good place. I still think our idea was the best. Buy it,
yeah.
Put it to the side. Do you have a plan? And get people to miss it so they can want it again. And when you have a plan and you have a television deal, and I think people would have been really pumped.
All right, we are done here. So I was just looking at my schedule, and before we get out of here, I think there's going to be one show that I'm definitely not going to be in town for. So we may have to pre-record something or do something about that. So the show I'm going to be out of town on is, let's see, where is this? Yeah, so the 11th. So yeah, that Toronto show, that's the one that I'm not going to be in town for. We're going to.
In the 12th?
So yeah, so I leave the 11th.
Oh, okay.
Miss the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, back late Saturday night. So I will, so we'll miss, I'll miss our normal recording. So we'll have to figure out something to plug into that time frame.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't like to go dark. So we'll have something. I'm not exactly sure what it'll be, but we'll have something in there for that show.
No dark, no dark elevation.
Nope. We're not going dark, not going dark elevation. All right. So for John, I'm Double G. See you next week. Peace out.